Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
O'clock, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Mark Grody with you, taking it up until 10 o'clock tonight here on The Score. Talking a lot of Super Bowl, some recap of that game that was yesterday, outlooks for the NFL offseason, what it may or may not bring for the Chicago Bears this year. As always, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call.
What was with your guy, Jim Nantz, at the end of the game? And I've heard this from, I think, a few times in dramatic statements, saying about the great accomplishments of Tom Brady, and they are great, they are spectacular, and that's not hyperbole, a rare moment when saying somebody's great is not hyperbole. But what is with him and many saying that you will never see this again? This is something that you will like, it's going to be hard to top that, but we probably will see this again at some point.
You think we'll
time.
See somebody win six Super Bowls?
I do.
Do
I
you?
Do.
How long do you plan
maybe,
on living?
Hey, maybe it starts next year. I play about 122 or so.
Okay. So I'm tapping out in like the early 70s probably.
Okay.
Any day past that will be a bonus.
Yeah.
So I don't have quite the amount of years to work with that you do.
Like maybe it starts next year with the Chicago Bears, just using, the local team. That maybe Mitchell Trubisky has his breakout season. Then you have a dominant defense and a dominant quarterback for the next 10 years. I'm just saying, like, I think it's like a little bit, that is hyperbole. It is a little bit dramatic to be throwing out the, you will never see this again. Well, we are seeing it, and you probably said something before this that you'll never see again, like a team winning three Super Bowl titles in the 90s or the 80s, or
yeah,
it's a team like the 85 Bears. You probably will see that at some point in time. I don't know. I just didn't like that. Like, just because
you're not there for the hyperbole.
Sports is always topped at some point in time. You know, like we never thought we would see anything close to Michael Jordan, and we are seeing something close to Michael Jordan, mm-hmm, in terms of LeBron James. I'll take MJ.
Not in six titles, my friend.
That's true, and I'll take the MJ in that argument every single day. But we do see athletes and sports teams that do top the previous one. So yeah.
But if I could take that bet, like if I'm on my deathbed and I could put the bet down and say, I guess it'd be cashed in on my deathbed. But if I could say now that you won't see someone else besides Tom Brady win six Super Bowls in their NFL career, that I would take that bet. Like my family could double off whatever I'm able to leave them, the whole $20 that it would be. Or that, and then someone gets to take the money away if I'm wrong. I would take that bet right now.
In your lifetime, right?
I have full confidence we're never going to see someone else win six Super Bowls.
We are talking in our lifetime.
In our lifetime.
Right.
Yes, in our lifetime. Not like till eternity. Because I'll take my chances.
At some point in time.
For millions of years.
That will be tough. I would say that in my lifetime, I'm going to say it, Sheppy. Someday
someone else
you and
is
going
to win.
Right. You and I are going to be sitting here filling for Lawrence Holmes maybe 20 years from now. We're doing our white guy show, and we're going to be like, yep, this guy, wow, I can't believe he topped Tom Brady.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. Time to go out to the hotline. Somebody that was at Super Bowl 53 last night in Atlanta joins us on that. It's none other than our very own and Pro Football Weekly's Hub Arkish. What's going on, Hub?
Nothing much, guys. How you doing?
Good. First question for you. I'm on one side of this. Grody, not so much on board with me. How much did you enjoy last night's game?
I loved every minute of it.
Yes! Sure. My guy!
I predicted you would like it, Hub. Why did you like it?
Because it was a great football game. I mean, you know, defense is half the game, guys, whether people like it or not. And there's teams that can play it and teams that can't. And those were two of the best Super Bowl, probably the two best defensive performances in Super Bowl history. I suppose you throw the 85 Bears in and the way they trashed the Patriots. And the running game of the Patriots, so impressive. And by the way, you know, for those who are saying there was no offense, prior to that last meaningless 50-second drive or whatever you call it, where the Rams added 60 yards, Patriots had over 400 yards of offense. They held the Rams to 200. It was a brilliant performance by the New England Patriots. It was a brilliant coaching job. It was not Tom Brady's best, but certainly was Julian Edelman's best. You know, his kid Sony Michel is going to be interesting for a while. So, you know, I enjoyed everything about it. I am not one who likes video game football. I think it's impressive what some of these guys can do on offense, but I think what we saw yesterday, which is certainly good news for Bears fans, is that you still win championships by running the football and playing defense.
Yeah, and I bet you, Hub, loved in the fourth quarter when the Patriots, after they had intercepted Goff, they get the ball, they're pinned deep in their own territory, a 2nd and 9, Sony Michel with a 26-yard run on that same drive, Rex Burkhead with a 26-yard run. And from L.A.'s perspective, it's like, how in the world at that point are you letting those two guys beat you? And to me, those were the biggest runs of the game right there.
Well, I can tell you, go back and look at him. Rob Gronkowski is one of the best blockers in football. And he had the pivotal kickout block on both runs. I think it was Joe Thuney on the first one, and I can't remember who had the second block. It might have been Andrews on the Burkhead run. But they were perfectly blocked. It really was just finding the lane for Michelle and Burkhead. You know, they showed great vision. But it was football played at the highest level. And the fact that it was more about the defense than the offense, you know, I realized maybe that turned some people off these days, but I don't understand why. I mean, you could hear the hitting all over the stadium. It was Dante Hightower was brilliant. I thought, actually, I would have voted for Stephon Gilmore for MVP, not that Julian Edelman wasn't deserving. But, I mean, Gilmore, you know, 5 tackles, 3 passes, defensed, an interception, a forced fumble. Yeah, I think a quarterback hit. I mean, for a quarterback, he played the game as well as you can play it. And it was just, I loved it. And by the way, for the Rams, I mean, I thought Ndamukong Suh, I don't know where he was for the first, you know, for the regular season, basically. But in the playoffs, this guy was the old Ndamukong Suh. Aaron Donald is certainly Aaron Donald. Marcus Peters, who's a really strange dude, had a really good game in coverage yesterday. Tlaib was okay, but Peters, that's what made him the best cornerback in football a couple of years ago. His problems, he's so screwed up upstairs that who knows what you're going to get. And you know, listen, I know Sean McVay is beating himself up, but when you hold the Patriots to 13 points, those were two excellently coached football teams. Belichick's the GOAT. There's no question about that. But McVay has nothing to be ashamed of, and that team, I suspect, will be back. By the way, Brandon Cooks signed a long-term deal, so he is going to be around for a while.
Yeah, there's a couple of texters chimed in with that as well. In terms of, and you mentioned it a little bit there, McVay was beating himself up after the game, said that he got pantsed by Belichick. What specifically did you see that Belichick and the Patriots coaching staff did and exploited and confused the hell out of Jared Goff so well?
Well, they played 6 DBs and 5 pass rushers. And when you've got Dante Hightower, who's a 260-pound linebacker, Kyle Van Noy is 255, 260, you can get away with that. So they played 3D linemen, Van Noy and Hightower, for a good part of the game, and were still able to drop 6. And so they were constantly in the backfield. They had penetration all night long. And when he looked to unload the ball too soon, there was no openings because you were playing, you know, 3-4 receivers against 6.
Hey, tell me more about Marcus Peters, because you mentioned that a couple of times. Like, you said, how does his strangeness manifest itself?
Well, I mean, he was kicked off the team in Washington, and people were surprised when the Chiefs used the 18th pick because he had kind of, some teams had him off their board. First, he was suspended for a game in Washington, then they brought him back, and then about 3-4 weeks later, they just kicked him off the team altogether. He got to Kansas City, was very good as a rookie, was outstanding his second and third year, and then he stopped playing the Chiefs defense and started freelancing. He was just kind of playing man on his own, and he was piling up some impressive interceptions, but he was also getting burned left and right. He is as chippy as they come. He is picking a fight with somebody every week, no matter who the opponent is. And he's just a different kind of guy. I spent about 10 minutes talking to him on Thursday, and they actually, I think the Rams hit him a little bit. He was out there. He didn't have his own riser on whatever they call that clown show, the first night, opening night, I guess it is. And then they didn't bring him out Tuesday when they brought out 10 players, even though he's the best cornerback in football at times. Wednesday, he didn't have his own table. So Wednesday and Thursday, they did give him his own table. And he was mobbed because nobody had gotten to talk to him at that point. But they had somebody from the PR staff kind of attached to his hip at all times, kind of listening to what he was saying, because I think they just never know what's going to come out of this guy's mouth next. And he was actually pretty good the 10 minutes I was there. You know, I mean, when I say pretty good, he's very sullen. I think he smiled once in 10 minutes. He talks a lot about, you know, beating people up and annihilating them and everything. But for the most part, in fairness to him, I mean, for the 10 minutes I was talking to him, there was nothing outlandish.
Speaking with Hub Arkus from Pro Football Weekly, you hear him on The Score here regularly as well. Follow all of his work on Twitter at Hub_Arkus for all the details on that. Todd Gurley, in terms of his health, what do we know after, I mean, didn't get the work that he was advertised to be getting and that any rightful football mind would think that he would have gotten if fully healthy last night?
He can't be healthy, man. They keep insisting that he is, and obviously he's not. He's the best running back in football. You know, and you don't take the ball away from the best running back in football. Yes, C.J. Anderson had Super Bowl experience, and he played well when they brought him in with 4 weeks left in the season. But the Patriots took him away last night. And you got to go to Gurley, and he still hasn't, what did he get, 8 carries? You know, I got to go back and look, but I don't care how, and then he's on the bike all night. I don't care how many times they insist he's healthy. He can't be, because otherwise it doesn't make sense. They didn't throw him any passes. They threw him the ball once. There was another one that Goff turfed. This guy's one of the best receiving backs in football. He's the best touchdown scorer in football, and you don't use him in the Super Bowl, in the NFC title game? That just defies explanation, and we know. And I'm not saying this facetiously. I think Sean McVay is probably pretty close to brilliant, if not brilliant. He's an outstanding football coach, and there's no way, if that guy's healthy, that he's not going to find a way to use him.
Hey, we got into a little bit of Bears talk that kind of folded over from Super Bowl talk, and that was specifically about the Bears secondary. I thought they made a really good move, you know, with the offensive line to bring Bobby Massie back. Does it come down to a choice of paying either Adrian Amos or Bryce Callahan? And if that is the case, which one of those two guys do you think is more important to this Bears defense right now?
Well, Mark, this is based on nothing but, you know, all of our coverage all year long. This is not something somebody's told me, but my gut is telling me that they're not going to make a priority out of either one of them. And I think that, you know, Callahan is one of the best nickels in football, and I think you would if you could. But nickels have started getting paid the last couple of years. It's going to take probably $25 to $30 million and maybe $14 to $18 million guaranteed to get him done. And he can't stay on the football field. I mean, you know, he hasn't played a full season for you. He's an undersized guy who's a big hitter, and he's constantly getting hurt. And the Bears, they're not in cap trouble, but they have to be a lot smarter than they've been in the past. This is as fiscally responsible as they've had to be, you know, with somewhere between $20 and $30 million in cap space, not anymore with Massey done. And so, you know, you've got to figure out who you're going to spend that money on. With Adrian Amos, he improved. He's a better player than I ever thought he was going to be, but he still is just an average, maybe better than average safety. And what I'm thinking there is that there's only two spots that are loaded in free agency. There's a ton of edge rushers, even though most of them are going to get tagged. You got the Marcus Lawrence is definitely going to get tagged. Jadeveon Clowney's going to get tagged. Ziggy Ansah won't. He'll get some money. And then there's a few others. The only other position where there's legitimate frontline talent is safety. And, I mean, you look at Landon Collins is one of the best defensive players in football. He's 25 years old. He wants to stay with the Giants, and the Giants will probably tag him. But then there's four more Pro Bowlers. I mean, Earl Thomas is 30. He's had the injuries the last couple of years, but he's Earl Thomas. Tyrann Mathieu appears to be completely healthy. The Honey Badger would look great next to Eddie Jackson. You got Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix. You got LaMarcus Joyner. Why would you pay a lot of money for Adrian Amos when for a few bucks more you can get a guy like that? I think the one place where they can significantly upgrade the talent on that defense is at that position. You're certainly set pretty much everywhere else. So my gut is telling me that they maybe let them both get away, that they try and sign one of those other four guys. I mean, I'd love to see Landon Collins here, but I just don't think that's going to happen. And then, you know, maybe Kevin Tolliver can play outside and Amu Kamara comes inside. Maybe one of the other guys they've got can help them out with a nickel. You develop another nickel, maybe you draft them. It's a little bit of a risk, but when you know that, what did you miss, 7 games this year? You know, when you're only going to have Callahan for half a season or 2/3 of a season anyway, you got to spend that money more judiciously.
Hub, before we let you go here, we started a conversation briefly a few moments ago, just based off of the NFC, the outlook for it as we approach the offseason and everything it'll bring. But if you had to handicap right now the outlook for this year, the way teams, their contracts are all constructed and rosters are currently constructed, of the Saints, Rams, Bears, and Eagles, who wins the NFC next?
Well, the Eagles to me are not going to be as talented as the Bears, Saints, and Rams. They're an older team. I know they won a Super Bowl last year, but they already had their struggles this year. You know, even though they stormed down the stretch, I don't know that their arrow is still going up. I think they'll still be competitive, but I don't think they're a Super Bowl team again this year. And you know, the thing about the Saints is that they probably have the fewest needs of any of the teams you just mentioned. I mean, everybody can get better, but they're pretty solid everywhere. But Drew Brees is going to be 40, and if Drew Brees gets hurt, they're done. I mean, because he's what makes some of those guys. They're actually, once you get past Michael Thomas, they're not very good at wide receiver. They're outstanding on the offensive line, but they're aging there on the interior. And while Teron Armstead is only 27, he's constantly hurt. Defensively, they've got to get better at safety. They've got to find more pass rush. I know the statistics look good against the run, but they were one of the worst in the league against the pass. So to me, it's kind of the Rams and the Bears. I think when you look at the young talent and the teams who are still getting better, the teams whose arrows are still going up, I don't know if the Rams bring back Ndamukong Suh, and I mentioned LaMarcus Joyner is a free agent, but that's about it. You know, they're in pretty good shape as far as keeping everybody else. They'll probably get Cooper Kupp back healthy. They've got still a few youngsters who are still getting better. But, you know, guys, when you look at the team with the young talent that still has the most room between where they're at now and their ceilings, it's the Bears. And so the question is, what's Mitch Trubisky going to be? Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to be the answer. If Mitch Trubisky takes another step in 2019 like he did in 18, and if the Bears stay even close to as healthy, I think the Bears may be going to a Super Bowl.
Do you think it's in him? Do you think Mitch has that next level, that's, you know, quite frankly, that star level?
I think he's definitely got that kind of athletic ability, Mark. I don't think he's got the biggest arm in the league, but he's got more than enough arm. I love his competitiveness. I love his leadership. I love his work ethic. I just don't know what goes on in his head when he's getting pressured back there. It's not that he gets happy feet. It's not that he's afraid to get hit, but he misses a lot of open receivers. There's a lot of reads he's still not making. Now, again, you know, least experienced college quarterback ever drafted in the first round. Even after starting for the better part of two seasons, he's got, 26 starts under his belt now. That's still young for NFL quarterbacks. I think this is the pivotal year for him, much like 2018 was for Jared Goff. And if he's got the combination of composure and the innate feel for the game, that intuitive ability to read the field, then yes, I think he can go to a few more Pro Bowls, and I think he can be a Super Bowl quarterback. I think he's got everything else.
Hub, appreciate the time as always. Thank you for that, and we'll be following you at Pro Football Weekly.
All right, guys, take care.
Hub Arkish, you hear him here regularly on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Hey, the outlook for the Bears. Man, can we get the bourbon already? It's my goodness.
It's amazing how, you know, the Bears were horrible the previous four seasons, and how, like, the idea of getting back to Bourbonnais was an agonizing one. And you're right. Like, I was there every step of the way, and I'm ready to get back to the grind. You know what, Chappie? I'm ready to get back in that little dorm room at Olivet Nazarene, okay, and live my Dairy Queen TGI Fridays lifestyle and burp. You know,
nothing wrong with that.
I'm good to go, man.
There's nothing wrong with that lifestyle. That was football camp sophomore through senior years of high school for me. Was that Dairy Queen stand right across whatever the street is from from Olivet Nazarene University. Yes. We would stop there. We'd load up on all of the desserts, ice cream cones and blizzards and whatever else. Oh. And as we drove home down 113, we'd drive recklessly like the idiot 16 and 17-year-olds we were and have battles with the snow cones and whatever else, throwing them at each other's windshields. Real intelligent thing to do in our ripe young ages.
Was BBCHS, was that in your is that a team that you played? Was that
we
in
never
your
really
comp?
Played that. Okay. In middle school, we played one of the Bourbonnais schools. I guess the one Bourbonnais school, Bradley Bourbonnais. But in high school, they were level larger than a couple levels larger than we were.
Yeah, I'm kind of a Bourbonnais hipster because I've been going to Bourbonnais my entire life. I had family that lived in both Bourbonnais and Kankakee, so these mysterious regions. Like once they went to Bourbonnais, I'm like, hey, I know that place. I've been hanging out in the Bourbonnais cornfields my whole life, hanging out with my cousins and getting into trouble and going to the convenience store and Jimmy John's Dairy Queen. Yes.
Man, they had Jimmy John's back in your youth?
No, actually they didn't.
I was going to say, I don't remember a Jimmy John's until I think I went to college.
No, you're right. That was my Bourbonnais thing. Like almost every night. Like I'm not a huge Jimmy John's guy, but like when I was in Bourbonnais covering the Bears, like every night I would get a different Jimmy John's sandwich and a different Blizzard. And I'm fighting the weight gain to this day.
It's a constant battle.
Yeah. Here I am.
I fluctuate very much, up and down.
Are you? You're a fluctuator.
Oh,
so am
big time fluctuator.
Yep, you and
I. It's like people will see me and like, oh, you look like you lost 30 pounds because I did.
Yes.
And then people will see me and kind of give me the eye and like, yes, I did. It's back and better than ever.
Right. They don't say anything. There's only certain people that will say something to you like, dude, your belly's looking pretty big. Like I have friends that my mom will always say that to me. So like, you're looking very fat right now.
You're looking very happy. Yes.
I remember when
joyously eating everything.
One of my weight gains actually occurred during my Illinois State days. And I remember coming back from college and it, like sometimes you don't notice it, but other people notice the weight gain. At least this is what happened to me. My mom looked at me and she, you know, she made a comment like, "Boy, you're really getting fat." And, you know, and
thanks,
I said,
Mom.
And
I am.
I really told her. I said, and I felt this. I said, "No, I'm just bloated because you know you're in college and you're eating a lot of crap." And I, you know, give me a couple days and I'll be. She's like, "No, you're not bloated. You're fat." I'm like, "Okay, all right." And that's all the motivation you need sometimes.
Yeah, just mom to be brutally honest with you. Exactly. And to have no filter like moms are known to do.
Uh-huh. Shame works.
What's it?
Oh,
it does
work.
It's a great motivator.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It was a tremendous motivator.
As far as I was concerned, I wasn't gaining any weight in my recent weight gain until like people told me I was gaining weight. Like, I was like, oh, nobody's noticing this because nobody's saying anything. It's because I'm wearing bigger shirts and people aren't really noticing what's going on. Maybe I actually look better a little bit thicker and people aren't noticing. And then people say, nah, dude, you're fat and you don't look great. At this point,
you're fat, you don't look great.
Right.
You don't look like you shaved in 6 days.
Right.
You look like hell, Mark.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to say.
It just takes one or two people, then you're like, okay, time to get back. And I'm back. I'm back, by the
back
way.
Back and better than ever.
I'm eating healthy.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski. We're the eating healthy portion this radio station this evening. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Continue more on the Super Bowl. Some of the things we haven't discussed yet. Commercials do anything for you?
Cool.
Might have that coming up here next on 670 The Score. Not one of the highlights last night. Welcome back in. Nick Szepkowski, Mark Grody with you. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. It's Nick Szepkowski, Mark Grody with you here on The Score. One thing we haven't done yet, only old commercial talk. NFL, to me, your big winner last night in the commercial world. There was nothing that even came close to touching their commercial, their 100-year celebration where you have Marshawn Lynch knocking over the cake at the banquet, and all of a sudden, all of the Hall of Famers are diving for the loose ball. You saw plenty of old Bears in that as well.
That's
Singletary,
great.
Urlacher laying out, who was it, Deion Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, saw some great old Bears and just great old players in that one.
Some great production, too.
Right.
I mean, they had to have used, like, a stunt double for everybody, like, landing over. It looked very real. That was some...
Well, just like they had everyone kind of play their role.
Yes.
Singletary's eyes light up. You have Ed Reed when he finally starts to swarm in, being sneaky little Ed Reed and you trying to hide from coming and making the surprise tackle on whoever he ended up tackling in it. Montana's comment, I don't care how corny it was, when he's like, not today, cowboy, or whatever he says to Michael Irvin, he throws to Jerry Rice instead. I'm like, that was perfect. It was corny, but it was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it.
No, well done, bro, to the NFL. We don't usually say bravo to the NFL. But
yeah,
they
don't do a whole lot always right.
They hire the right production people and put the right amount of money into that. So, yeah, that may have been the best, because there really wasn't one.
I was surprised you didn't like the Harrison Ford one.
Yeah, no, I did not like it. I was not overwhelmed by it. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I think you know why. Can I be honest with you? I think it's because I just, like, I don't like seeing old Harrison Ford, because
he's been brutal lately.
I know. And, like,
don't get on a plane with him either.
No, you don't want to get on a plane with him. Stay off my plane. But it's
just, do yourself a favor.
I'm serious.
I'm landing it on a golf course. Chewy.
We're going the wrong way. We're going down.
I'm crash landing my warplane.
We found this man. No, I just, like, I don't like to see my heroes, like Harrison Ford is, I don't like to see them get old. You know what I mean? It's just like, because it just, you know, you see him, and that's just not that's not Indiana Jones right there. That's not Dr. Richard Kimball.
No,
that's
it's not. Our president. It's a far cry from it.
Right.
When he remade Indiana Jones, what year was that? 2010-ish? Yeah. Somewhere in there. That was a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Like, that was.
I didn't see it, actually.
That was a terror of the world.
Was Shia LaBeouf?
That was horrendous.
That was great.
Oh my God.
That was excellent.
You are the one person on. No one from that cast would tell you that was a good movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
Like, that thing was a disaster.
I enjoyed that movie thoroughly.
Oh my goodness.
Did you like Harrison Ford's performance? Or
did I did.
Okay.
And
how old were you in 2008?
Four.
Wait.
Five.
That movie did come out in 2008.
That's why I just pulled up its IMDb.
More like 2000 late.
You sure?
the one
with Shia LaBeouf. It was 2008.
Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. That's the last one he did,
isn't
it?
Is that the one where the dad is James Bond?
Ago.
No. Is there Sean Connery?
Yeah,
the day is mine, Trebek.
Yeah, he plays Indiana's dad.
Yeah.
You will rule the day.
Shia LaBeouf, yeah. This is the one you're
Shia.
Talking about.
Shia.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the one you're talking about, Tony. It's awful. It's on a Mount Rushmore of worst movies ever produced that featured a big name.
Tony Badgett Gill strikes again.
Good God.
Really?
When did you watch it last?
Movie.
When did you watch it last?
It comes on television a lot. And I stop and watch.
You need a different
time.
TV. You need a different
every
cable
time.
Provider
like
or something.
Like TNT plays it a lot, TBS. Yeah, every time it's on, got to watch Crystal Skull.
I don't know the last movie I'm looking at here. I've never been big on the Star Wars thing. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I was big on the Star Wars thing until they added on to it. So, like, the trilogy when I was a kid,
yeah,
that was awesome.
Uh-huh.
This is great. Like, you're 10 years old, and Star Wars gets re-released, and it was great. This is perfect. All the action figures and everything. And then they got to the prequels, where whatever that Jar Jar Binks showed up.
Yeah, the prequels weren't great, but
I never showed up again after that.
Really? Even, like the last couple versions?
It was, like, one of those that was just so traumatizing that I could not go back to Star Wars after that.
But what about old Han Solo?
Never got there.
Really?
Never made it that far.
He dies, by the way, so I just spoiled it for you. Now you can't leave. So now you can't go back to it at this point.
Who kills him?
Was it
ask me.
Was it Boba Fett? No, I don't remember. Whatever
I'm the wrong guy to ask.
Whatever the Darth guy was in that one. Was it Darth Maul that killed him? No. No, it was his... It was his son. Actually, I think it might have been his son that killed
him. Goes around comes around, huh?
Yeah.
Han? Exactly. Think about that. Put that in your pipe and smoke.
Why are you going to kill me? Get off this plank. Yeah, so his dad, I believe it was his son who plays the evil mask-needing-to-breathe guy in that particular flick.
Okay. So. Yeah, that movie just, I don't know the last thing that Harrison Ford was a part of that I was like, yeah, that was a great performance by Harrison Ford. I am looking here. And to me, it looks like it's 1997's what should have won Academy Award for Best Picture, Air Force One.
Yeah, you think that? There's got to be something between 87 and present day that was good with
97.
Oh, that was 97.
97.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to look here.
Man.
What lies beneath?
You know what he may need to do? Oh, yeah, yeah. Kylo Ren is the one that killed the old man. That was the name of the evil guy in that. I think
he
that maybe maybe what Harrison Ford needs to do at this point is maybe accept like one of those terrific supporting roles. You know what I mean? Like when you get a little bit older, like accept that sort of situation instead of trying to be a hero. Or maybe I need him to be a hero. I don't know. I don't know. I'm very conflicted about this.
I need him to be a sidekick. Be the wise old man that you go to for advice.
Yeah.
Like he would be perfect for who's the guy in Batman that Batman always bounces his ideas off of. Not Robin.
Joker. The Joker. That's
nah, not
of.
The Joker. Oh. But the old guy.
Alfred.
Alfred. Yeah. Sure.
He needs like the Alfred role for any superhero movie or any type of movie like that.
By the way, the 224 just nailed it. You guys have zero nerd cred. Yeah. That's about
you're probably. Right.
No, I'm a actually
sorry,
a Star
Jar
Wars
Jar
fan.
Binks, that ruined the entire series for me. I could not go back after
Jar
that.
Jar?
I'm like, that is a complete disaster. That was even worse than Indiana Jones's reboot.
You know, I have watched, by the way, for the record, I have watched all the Star Wars. I just have poor recall from them. Harrison Ford in 42. Oh, was he in 42?
He was Branch Rickey.
Okay, so maybe that is, there you go. That's okay. The type of role that well yeah I guess the point is the there hasn't been a Harrison Ford led picture which has had much credibility to it at this point. That keeps the Fugitive references very very much alive because we can't
and
move
that's
on from
really
that.
All we're in this business for
yes
honestly if we're breaking things down and being upfront about it
uh-huh
the more Fugitive the better. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Jordan's in Evanston. His thoughts on Indiana Jones. I don't know how the hell we got here, but welcome, Jordan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey.
Good.
You were mixing up earlier. You were mixing up the third Indiana Jones, which is The Last Crusade, and that's the one with Sean Connery as his father. And the fourth one is The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull with Shia LaBeouf.
Okay.
The last one's the awful one.
So yes. Tony actually got it wrong. Tony said that Sean Connery was in the Shia LaBeouf one, which is not correct. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for straightening that up, Jordan. 312-644-6767. But in terms of like the other commercials, I enjoyed the Harrison Ford one.
Okay.
Thought it was funny with the Amazon and I mean Alexa for me. I don't know if you have that at all in your apartment.
I don't. My parents have it, though.
It gets worse and worse every time I use it.
Yeah.
It's just like, Alexa, play WSCR, and then I get some station.
Really?
Where
so it doesn't work?
Swahili, okay. And it's like, I said WSCR. Picking up 670thescore.com from the radio, or 670thescore from the radio.com app, and then it's like spitting out a different language. I'm like, Alexa.
Mike North.
Get your mind right. What the hell's wrong with you? Do something right. That's not very nice.
I get frustrated
with Alexa.
Here's something that I discovered that I've decided for Peyton Manning's future because he's still kind of deciding what he wants to do at this point. Does he want to run a team? Does he want to be a broadcaster? Peyton Manning should be the dad in a Friday night sitcom. I think he would do it really well. Like, watch. Did you see the little preamble before?
I did.
And he was really good.
You liked him?
Well, I think no.
I ended up liking the skit. Because the guy
John Malkovich
from Breaking Bad was awesome in it.
John Malkovich not in Breaking Bad though.
Not in Breaking Bad.
No,
what's he in? What am
not
I?
Not even close. He's been in a lot of stuff. I don't know his most recent work, but no, not in Breaking Bad.
Okay,
that much I can tell you.
All right. Anyway, he was awesome.
Yeah,
he was great.
Yeah.
I thought Peyton Manning was just like, shut up.
Well, that's just
it. Let the actors act. God, it's too much of you.
That's just it.
And you're not funny. You're trying so hard.
Exactly. This is why I'm saying he'd be the corny dad in a bad Friday night sitcom. His acting ability is just good enough to be in a Friday night.
Turns into Danny Tanner for you?
Yeah, a Friday night at like 8:30, like Peyton Manning would be making Middle America crack up. I think that he would be, like I said, he can act just well enough. That's your next stop right there for you, Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
Bryan Cranston is the Breaking Bad.
Bryan Cranston, yeah. Okay. I don't know. You ask me for Hollywood thoughts, and you're asking the wrong person. You're bound to be like
Oh, yeah. Malkovich, he's in Bird Box, which is a
That's
Netflix
what I just
show.
Watched. Yes.
You just watched it?
Yeah, I mean within the last week. I think I watched it last weekend.
Come on, Shep. How tired are you right now? Come on.
I don't know.
I don't care.
Exactly. Harrison.
So Peyton Manning, Friday night sitcom guy. Let me just, I could race through mine really quickly here.
Okay, the other ones that you like?
Like the hits and non-hits here. So there's a few bullet points I have here. Chance the Rapper with the Backstreet Boys. No reason for you to do that, Chance the Rapper. That's not going to help your credibility.
I liked that one.
Did you?
I did. It.
That seems like something that you would like, because you're like Britney Spears boy. So that, like, Backstreet Boys.
Britney Spears is a legend.
You and I were both at that concert.
That's
come
right.
to think of it.
Yes, we were. Britney Spears was a legend, to put it properly, put it in proper context. I don't think I'm overselling that whatsoever. But in terms of, like, that commercial, I just thought it was, all right, Chance the Rapper, you get today's modern era, uh-huh, all that. You get Doritos, so you're feeling young, because it's always the trendy and young feeling potato chip. And then there's the Backstreet Boys for the older crowd, and it's like, this works, it blends perfectly.
What a feel-good commercial that was for you. Sheppy was just too goosebumps, and man.
I don't know about goosebumps, but I liked it. The other one that I really enjoyed, and I found out today there was backlash over it because it offended someone. Because we live in a world where if you're not offended, then you're doing something wrong. But the car shopping commercial, where they're in the elevator, where it ended up being a commercial that the couple is looking for a new car, and it's like on this elevator that's bringing them in the worst places that you can go. So it's going, their idea is going car shopping,
oh,
is supposed to be a disaster.
And they go to the basement,
so it's
right?
various different places. You're going to jury duty.
Yes.
You're going to get a root canal. You're going to get a colonoscopy, whatever the heck it is. You're going to get a car. Wow, you're going down. And they're like, no, we're in fact going for this car place. And they're like, oh, well, you're headed on up then. Like, I thought that one was great. But the vegan dinner buffet or vegan dinner party was one of the stops on the Place of Awfulness. So apparently, many vegans out there, very upset,
of course,
that they were made fun of and looked down upon during Super Bowl 53's commercial break last night.
What is this? All right, so I like the T-Mobile commercials. I thought they were adorable with the quintessential texting, giving the recipe to dad, the conversation one might have with their girlfriend. Did you see that?
I
think that maybe you and Ash, maybe you've had that conversation before, perhaps, about bringing home something.
Oh, you're hitting, like, right at home.
When the wife or girlfriend tells you to bring food, and they say it's your choice, is it really your choice?
No, it's
at
not.
At that point, it's not.
Never is.
It's what they want, and then if you get
what
you want.
Why did you
want,
get this? Well, because you said get what you want.
Right.
I don't want tacos the fourth night in a row. You didn't say that.
And for all you people at home, Sheppy is wolfing down tacos right now. So I don't know
what's going on in your candy stand.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening in your suburban household right now, Sheppy. But
leftover week old tacos.
There are tacos. I like those. You know what? I've realized this about the Fast and the Furious. I've not seen one of those movies, and there's been 14 of them. I've realized that they make people happy for whatever reason. I will never go see one. It does nothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it dawned on me, these movies really make people happy, so I'm okay with it. It was sort of a revelation for me. I'm not going to rip Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious, I loved the first one.
You
did?
I
was like 15 or 16.
Right.
I was like, this is great. This is awesome. Went and got tickets early for Too Fast, Too Furious, like bought them like the day before at the theater, thinking this is the hit of the summer. This is the blockbuster.
Warm up the car.
Boys, we're going there opening night. I never watched a Fast and Furious movie since then. It was my Jaja Binks moment. It's like, I'm never going back. I can't do it. Done. Over.
Yeah.
This series, fait accompli. I haven't watched one since. Loved the first one again. Second one was that bad that I just couldn't get back into it.
They make people happy, though.
That's true.
The worst commercial.
And they make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yep.
And Vin Diesel might be the worst actor I've ever seen in my life.
But he makes people happy, too. Like, he is. He's horrible, but people love him. Like,
except Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, except for Dwayne Johnson. I don't like him either, but he also makes people happy. So I'm whatever makes people happy.
There you go.
The worst commercial of the night, I can't even tell you what the product was, that chunky style milk. Like, that would have been good for a Saturday Night Live skit, like time and place, but not while everybody's eating gobs of food. And then you see, like, that was a turn away moment for me to see spoiled gobby milk being poured out of, and I think that they thought it was hilarious because they the pouring of it and the actual drinking of it, not good.
Yeah, that one was bad. I need someone to explain to me the corn syrup thing with the Bud Light commercial.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a good job of getting their point across. There is not corn syrup in that particular beer.
I don't know what corn syrup does in terms of drinking beer.
I just think, it sweetens it, obviously, and I think it's the worst form of sugar. So, I mean, I think they do get a victory for that. And I honestly did not realize that, but apparently, you know, Coors and Miller...
Seems like it's being geared towards, an incredibly small audience.
Well, ultimately, nobody's going to care about the corn syrup factor, but maybe for, 24 hours, people do. When they're making their beer selection, they're saying, there's corn syrup in that, so sure.
I did enjoy, also, I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, but I did enjoy the commercial where Dilly Dilly guy loses his battle on the joust,
yes.
And then gets torched by the dragon, the flying dragon that
so good.
The HBO Bud Light, I guess the double up that they did, the teaming up they did on that commercial. I enjoyed that one.
Finale season is coming. One more, I got one more here on my list that I didn't like. The Little John Pepsi commercial. The okay,
is Pepsi okay?
Well, and here's the thing, And it was Steve Carell who was doing it. To me, that's something that was Dave Chappelle's thing. That was his skit. He invented that the Little John characterization. So, it's somebody has taken it and used it. I feel that's only for Chappelle. It stopped being funny.
He took it from Little John.
Who, Chappelle?
Yeah, Little John.
He did. I know Chappelle did. But
he's the one that,
But Chappelle,
made it a thing.
Right, he made it a thing. Little John started doing imitations of himself because of Chappelle, which he never would have done. So it's Chappelle's creation. It's his impersonation and saying, I have invented this, and now Steve Carell is doing it. And I guess Little John is allowed to do it, but I just think that that's Chappelle's property.
Yeah. No? I don't know. A hat tip towards Chappelle. That's what I think of when I think of Lil Jon. God bless you, Lil Jon, but I think of Dave Chappelle when I hear your name.
I do, too. I do, too. It's sort of like the...
You and Rick James
and
Charlie
sort of
Murphy and all of them. And Prince, I think of Dave Chappelle.
It's how the superfans came to life, and then we all just sort of embraced it and took that characterization and ran with it and became it. We would not have done that if it wasn't for Robert Smigel and Saturday Night Live coming up with that act. And now Dave Chappelle... Little John is kind of a cartoon character because of Dave Chappelle and nobody else.
That's Mark Grody. I'm Nick Szepkowski, 312-644-6767. If you'd like to chime in on the conversation, plenty more Super Bowl to come as well on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back in. Nick Szepkowski, Mark Grody with you, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Bottom of the hour being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Now that the big game is over, it's time to focus on winning hockey. The Chicago Wolves are off to one of their best starts since their last championship. Wolves have 5 February home games, all against teams over 500. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Coming up here at the top of the hour, you had a local win a big-time award at the NFL Awards show on Saturday night. We'll get into a conversation about that and about that award. So that's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Until then, though, we go to Naperville. Jay has thoughts on some of the Super Bowl commercials. What's up, Jay?
Hey, I was just calling to explain where the corn syrup is being used. So in the brewing process, they use corn syrup. It's called adjunct, and it's to help fermentation. So Coors Light, Miller Lite use corn syrup. Bud Light uses rice syrup, but it isn't anything in the finished goods.
And
right?
Why should anyone care?
They shouldn't.
I'm just confused by the, they brought out the corn syrup last night.
Yeah.
And it's oh my God, there's corn syrup.
Well, I don't
okay,
think
there's probably a lot of things in beer that honestly shouldn't be drinking.
Well, that's a good point, but I think corn syrup, it's sort of a dirty word when it comes to things in your food that you don't want. You know what I'm saying? But you can put it both ways. Here, corn syrup is probably delicious, actually. So to have corn syrup in your product probably makes your product taste better. But then you could say that the other products are slightly more healthy, but it's all relative because we are talking about alcohol, which in itself is probably not something healthy if you put more than one or two in your body. So I don't know. You could say it's a win for Bud Light or Miller Lite, right? One might taste a little better because it's got corn syrup, and one may help
be better
you little,
for you or right. not as bad for you.
Right, right. It may not be as many points on a Weight Watchers diet or something.
I don't care!
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I think that our guy, Dr. Richard Kimball, figured that one out perfectly there.
Well, Jay...
Actually, that wasn't Richard Kimball. That was Robert... Or that was... what's his name?
That was Dr. Richard Kimball.
I
don't care!
No, he doesn't yell that.
Oh,
he says,
I'm sorry.
I didn't kill
right.
my
it's,
wife.
It's Tommy Lee Jones.
And Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah,
exactly.
My God, I'm sorry. I was,
man,
I'm
I thought you
game.
Were Mr. Fugitive.
I know. I'm a fraud.
Oh,
I'm
my
fraud.
Goodness.
Yeah. Yeah,
this
exactly.
Like,
I don't
holy
care.
Holy cow. Man, it's okay, Groats.
Yeah, it happens.
I'll let it slide.
I do have some thoughts on Matt Nagy. Like getting, I'm really happy that he got it. I think
all right, well, let's save this.
Yeah.
Because we have to take another... commercial break.
Okay.
Tony's freaking out over there in his Warriors hat. Mr. Bandwagon himself, lifelong Golden State Warriors fan, Tony Gill, freaking
out
on the other side of the glass.
Wait, man, really quickly, I know you got to go. You all your life, you've been a Warriors fan.
No, I've been a Baron Davis fan, and then when he played for the We Believe Warriors, I started rooting for.
Okay,
now
that's I'll accept
and,
that.
Don Nelson's team. Yep.
Nick is not accepting that. I will actually accept that from
the same guy that has a Spurs hat that he likes to wear.
Okay,
too.
Wait a
minute. That hat is dope.
You're a
90s logo hat?
Yeah.
Nope.
It's Tony Gill.
Bears.
Man, he's loyal to you as long as you keep winning.
Yeah.
We'll take a timeout. Matt Nagy won Coach of the Year. Discuss that award and the strangeness kind of behind it next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.